Hey, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cedarstrom. And we're going to be connecting to Wendy Wilson here shortly. I don't know if she's here yet or not, but hopefully Todd got my message. I needed to get that out because it always happens at the top of the hour when the music is playing. But good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. And my co-host today is Dave Allen. You're listening to Financial Survival. And we're going to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Wednesday, December 18th, 2019. Good afternoon, Dave.
Good afternoon, Wendy. Good afternoon, Melody. And happy hump day.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, yes, yes. Well, it's next week at this time. We will be off. It will be Christmas. And we'll have to give out the holiday hours. We'll probably be taking off a little more time this year than what I normally do, since it's falling in the middle of the week. But first, let's go ahead and get started on the gold prices today. And let me just move something here. A little pressure on gold today. I mean, it still is holding the $1,476, down, you know, 40 cents. And I did see that the dollar is a little bit stronger today, and we'll go over that here in just a bit. We did have a high of 1479. Silver, though, is still up a penny at $17.09 for the day. Platinum was up $8 at $938. Palladium was down 31 at $1,927. And you have the USDX today. Let me bring that up here. I'm just getting all kinds of silly messages on this computer. I don't know why it does that, but hey, welcome to the world of computers, right? And let's go ahead and just go to the market report. I'll try to go back and get that in a little bit here. The Dow was down 26 points today at 28,240. The NASDAQ was up 4, 8,827. The S&P was down 1 at 3,191. 10-year yield, 1.92%, up 0.3. I love it. The euro. I've been talking about the euro for how long? It's still frozen. 1.11. I find that kind of interesting. I mean, it's been moving around at that number, and it's 1.11. That's been like that for, over a week, I believe. And that's odd. European and Asian markets basically unchanged. The world is just great. What emotion is driving the market? We talk about the fear and greed index, 87. That popped big. And of course, Bitcoin is a little bit stronger today. And we do have Wendy Wilson joining us. But first, let me go back and see if I can bring up the
USDX 97.39. Depending on your benchmark, it's either flat or up as much as like 0.1.
Okay. Well, thank you there, Dave. I knew you were handy to be on the program every now and then.
Good for something, huh?
You're good for something. What is oil? What did oil do?
Oil is unchanged at $60.94 a barrel.
All right. Well, we'll go over these numbers in the second segment of the program today. Got a little bit of a rough start, and we have Wendy Wilson joining us from Apothecary Herbs. I'm glad you were able to get connected, Wendy.
Yes, I am too. Hello, Melanie. Hello, Dave.
Hi there.
My IT did some work on my system, and so when I wanted to connect with you guys today, it wiped out the new account and reverted back to the old account. Isn't that wonderful?
Thank you, Skype.
Anyway, I thought today we'd talk about the battleground of infections, because we have this, you know, real serious problem, and scientific medicine's worried about the drug-resistant infections. And medicine has been resistant to the idea that there could be maybe some natural plants that could resolve these infections and also help address pain better than the drugs that are causing a lot of the drug addictions, right? So one major fight that we're seeing lately is a tug of war between the legislative rules governing the CBD products that are made out of hemp that are supposed to block pain receptors. So the public's kind of weary of the drug side effects of all the prescription painkillers, so they're looking at something else, a natural source. And the drug companies have lobbied Congress and have even sued companies that manufacture the CBD products in order to prevent them from making and selling them. And of course, then the fake news helped out with a lot of health threats about using CBD that circulated around in the media so that people were scared from trying it. So, but for the most part, we have this major problem with infectious bacterial infections that are drug resistant. So this area seems to be off limits. You know, drug companies can't do anything while scientific medicine is exploring natural herbal possibilities. This is something else. Mm-hmm. So the public is actually watching the health authorities, you know, what they're doing regarding this serious mess of curing drug-resistant infections, especially the kind that people are contracting while they're at the hospital or in other types of healthcare facilities. So the medical establishment knows they have to produce something that is effective, because it's getting to the point that only trauma surgery will be permitted due to the risks of getting these serious types of infections. And this would put a significant financial hit on the medical industry if they had to suspend all the elective, non-threatening type of surgical procedures. So you would see, you know, all the cosmetic surgeries a no-no, hip and knee replacements couldn't be done, that kind of thing. So it's a problem. Now, there was a report in December 2019. It was done by the Remedy Review. Now, Remedy Review is a research firm that was founded by a bunch of fitness professionals. They wanted to present unbiased information in the hope that it would possibly influence modern medicine and scientific research in the area of natural healing possibilities. And they do report 3 out of 4 people in general believe natural remedies are safer than prescription drugs. And this is especially evident with regards to, you know, the alternatives to the pain prescription drugs. So the public has been aware the pain drug addiction is a crisis. Natural remedies are already available to the public in the United States, and science is now interested, get this, in whole food medicine, but it's only interested in dissecting the plant so they can produce a patented prescription drug. And we all know what happens when you do that. You leave out vital nutrition, and then you get the side effects from a drug, see? So it seems that some are seeking scientific medicine's approval or endorsement on natural remedies, when all we really need to do is look at God's promise that they're here for the service of man and the healing of the nations. See, we can't forget that. Now, in May 2019, Emory Health Science in Atlanta, Georgia, this is so interesting, they produced this study on how medics and physicians during the Civil War, the Confederate field hospitals relied on natural traditional herbal remedies. Did you know that?
I did not.
Well, imagine the Surgeon General of the Confederate commissioned a field guide to plant and tree medicines using traditional medicines because they were nearly forgotten. You know, we just, you know, don't know about a lot of this stuff. So the military foraged for plants in the South, so the hospitals and the field medics could use them, and their primary focus was to find and use plants that inhibit infections and heal wounds quickly. Now, their supply lines had been cut off by the Union, and if they did get any medical supplies, it was unreliable. Shortages were a reality, so modern medicine is tapping into this field guide, this long-forgotten knowledge, in order to manufacture new drugs to stop drug-resistant bacteria. What do you think?
It's pretty awesome.
It's pretty awesome.
Color
yeah,
me skeptical.
Well, some of the knowledge on what plants on the plants that will assist us. Well, this research out of Emory Health Sciences, they were looking at plants the Confederates actually used. There was notes and journals, and they used these particulars for bacterial infections. So the folks at Emory started experimenting with these plant extracts, and this is what they found. They said the plants had antimicrobial activity against dangerous species of drug-resistant bacteria. And it offered analgesic effects, so it removed pain and inflammation from the wound. Wow, right?
Mm-hmm.
Here's a quote from Dr. Micah Ditwelder and Cassandra Quave They are professors at Emory Center Study of Human Health School Medicine Department of Dermatology. They said this: the Civil War Guide to Plant Remedies is a great reference. Our findings suggest that these plant therapies saved many soldiers from amputation of limbs and saved lives during the Civil War. This research into the Civil War medicinal plants might one day prevent modern wound care from being critical. So they're hoping to get rid of these infectious bacteria. She goes on to say, studying these plants in their traditional healing practices, we have uncovered promising candidates for new drugs. If we can identify which plant compounds are responsible for the antimicrobial activity. So we're seeing the ancient science of survival, she says. What do you think? And they go on to say, I'm a firm believer. This is by Dr. Daniel Zerowiski, chief pathologist and virologist of infectious diseases, Walter Reed Army Institute of Research. He says this: I am a firm believer in learning everything we can garner from the past so we can benefit now from the knowledge and wisdom of our ancestors. So the research on this from Emory did appear in the 2019 Scientific Reports and also May 2019 Journal of Science Daily. So, you know, this is just kind of a big example of necessity is the mother of invention. You know, you can't get the drugs from the Northeast, so you got to look for stuff what you have around you. You know,
do you think cost, you know, cost has just gone so high, people's you know, the people's interest in trying to find something else? I mean, would people really even care about other alternatives if the cost wasn't so high?
It really would depend on the person. I over the years of being an herbalist, it's kind of a horse to water thing and what people believe in. Some people are just really enamored and their faith is in scientific medicine. And then some people are skeptical about all the drug therapy and they want something more natural and gentler that wouldn't produce side effects or you know, hinder other functions. So some drugs, you know, will, you know, drain you of minerals and cause other diseases to occur. Some drugs will suppress your immune system function. So people are like, well, you know, it's sort of like when you take like drugs for cholesterol. It's like anti-cholesterol, just like antibiotics are antibacterial. They're not bacterial and cholesterol specific. It's everywhere in the body where you only needed to treat one area. Let's say you had, you know, walking pneumonia. You just needed to get the bacteria out of the pulmonary area, but it takes bacteria out of the gut as well, see? So it's a toss up as to, you know, the risk potential, and that's what people are wondering now. Do I really want to risk it? So the traditional medicine supplies were kind of scarce in the South, and so the Confederacy was using what they had available, and they also commissioned a botanist and a surgeon in South Carolina. His name was Francis Procher. He wrote a book on medicinal plants indigenous to the South, and that's what the Army was using for the plant remedies. The book was titled Southern Fields and Forests and was published in 1863. And inside that book, 37 species of plants were listed to cure gangrene and other types of infections. So now the Confederate Surgeon General, his name was Samuel Moore, and what he did is he took Porcher's work and he documented the success rates of these plants they were using in the field hospitals, the military field hospitals, and he actually published a guide later that he commissioned to the military called The Standard Supply of Indigenous Remedies for Field Service and the Sick and General Hospitals. And so this is pretty much the guide Emory was working from when they were starting to test their products. And what they did is they tested these plants against staph infections and the bacteria that causes blood poisoning called sepsis. And these plants kicked it to the curb. So according to Cassandra Quave, she says, in many instances, these plant extracts disarm the bacteria, prevents it from replicating. We've been taught that traditional plant remedies should be dismissed as incapable of fighting infections. Obviously, there are many more ways to cure infections, and we need to focus on them in this area because of the drug-resistant bacterial crisis. And Dr. Detwelder goes on to say, plants have a great wealth of chemical diversity, and they are extremely powerful and important. So I'm glad they're seeing it. There's God doesn't make junk, right, Melody? He doesn't.
No, he does not.
So I think people are just, you know, just if they can embrace it, you know, and not regulate the, you know, what out of it, people will benefit. You know what I'm saying? They'll benefit. Yeah, the pricing is a problem. So if with regulation comes high prices, see?
Well, you know, it's nowadays it seems like so many people are getting septic.
Yep.
And pardon?
Go ahead. No, I was going to say, especially if you're diabetic.
Yeah, and it seems like they go from, and granted, you know, maybe they don't go to the doctor in time and so forth, they have an ache and something like that, but it just seems like I just know so many people who have gone septic. I mean, they've been cured and were able to come out of it, but a very fine line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, on IV, bacterial IV drips, you know, antibiotics and stuff, you know, weak in the hospital. I see a lot of explosion in the infectious myelitis area where you get a bacteria in your skin cells. And then they get these, I mean, it can take you out in a skinny minute if you're not careful. I knew a person who was at a meeting on a Thursday and his thumb just swelled up right in front of his face like it was something out of a movie, he said. And then he looked at his foot, and his foot was swelling the same way. And the swelling went up his legs, and by the time he got to the emergency room, it was all the way to his hips.
Oh my gosh.
And he was diagnosed with infectious myelitis. Now, anything with itis at the end of the word is inflammation. So he had the mitochondria, the cells inflamed, okay, in his tissue. And this can encourage, you know, sepsis in a skinny minute, you know, because mm-hmm. the tissue's inflamed, it's swollen. If you get a break in it, you can get bacterial infection that balloons out of control. So it's important these days to really know, you know, what herbs we could use, even if we're thinking of them as a backup, you know, what we could use, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, we've got a sale. It's our annual holiday wellness event, 35% off orders of $50 or more. It runs through the first of the year. So they can just give us a call or go on our website, thepowerherbs.com. Toll-free number, 866-229-3663. 866-229-3663. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas
Thank
to you,
you,
Wendy.
You too.
Have a great holiday. And we'll be right back right after these few short messages. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Please visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And, where are we going to go? Where are we going to start, Dave? Wendy has some great information. Ladies and gentlemen, you really should call and get her magazine, her catalog. Give her a call at 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. Really is a scary world out there in the world of health and all the freaky things that, and you know, David has to come from our food and all the imports from our food, all the little bugs and you know, it's a buggy world out there, but you know our
buggy bug world.
Yeah, buggy bug world. I mean, our immune systems are not what they once were, and so if you need some help, give her a call. Well, it looks like some banks might need some vitamins,
some herbal remedies.
Yeah. Regulators gave a failing grade to five big banks today, and I'll let you guess which ones they are. But if you don't want to guess, J.P. Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, on their plans for a bankruptcy that wouldn't rely on taxpayer money. They have until October 1st to make amends or risk sanctions, and the move officially starts a long regulatory chain that could end with breaking up the banks. It's been almost a decade after the financial crisis. It underscores how the debate about banks being too big to fail continues to rage in Washington and exasperate Wall Street. So the five banks failed for reasons ranging from the way liquidity would be housed and shuffled among domestic and foreign subsidiaries to the manner in which executives would communicate problems as they arose during a crisis. That one's funny. They wouldn't communicate to us anyway at all. Today's announcements was the first time the two major banking regulators, the Federal Reserve and the FDIC, issued joint determinations flunking banks' plans, commonly called living wills.
Of the five, Melody, in addition to J.P. Morgan Chase and Wells Fargo, there's also Bank of America, State Street Bank, and the Bank of New York Mellon. Now, if they don't correct serious deficiencies in their plans by October, they could face stricter regulations like higher capital requirements or limits on business activities. Accomplishing that task may not be easy. The criticized banks have 5 months to reassess and rewrite wide swaths of their resolution plans to the regulators' satisfaction. At the same time, the compliance departments of the banks will also be focused on regulatory stress tests, whose results will be released before our next October. If the deficiencies persist for 2 years, then the banks have to divest their assets. There is, by the way, an appeal clause that permits a delay in that divestiture. The requirement for a living will was part of the of course. The requirements for a living, that's why they call them too big to fail. The requirement for a living will was part of the Dodd-Frank Wall Street reform legislation passed in the wake of the financial crisis. Of course, that's when the federal government spent billions of dollars on bailouts to keep big banks from failing and wrecking the global economy.
Well, you know what? These plans are separate from the Fed's stress tests, where banks demonstrate the stability by showing how they would withstand economic shocks in hypothetical scenarios. The agency's vice chair, Thomas Honig, said, and he was a voting member of the Federal Open Market Committee during the crisis, said that the plans show that no firm is capable of being resolved in an orderly fashion through bankruptcy. He added the goal to end too big to fail and protect the American taxpayer ending bailouts remain just that, only a goal.
Wow.
And it's a goal that will never be achieved. And why would they want to protect the American taxpayer? But go ahead. You know, that's just, the regulators continue to assess plans for four foreign banks labeled systemically important. And you're looking at Barclays, Credit Suisse, Deutsche, and UBS. So, you know, you have these deficiencies across the five banks, largely revolved around liquidity, governance, and operations. So,
what else is there?
Yeah, what else is there? You know, oh my gosh. You know what, Dave? It kind of makes me wonder, because for a while, these banks did. I think it was usually just Bank of America that would fail the stress test, these regulator tests. And now you have the five. Do you think maybe that they were expecting something more to happen to the point where, or maybe the lack of regulation, the regulation that was, taken off, deregulated areas of the bank that they got to the point of, well, we'll worry about these stress tests and so forth later on? Yeah,
that's a good question. I mean, the stress tests are different from this test that five of them failed. We'll have to follow the stress test results closely when they come out later next year.
Well, you'd think that these two reports would kind of go a little hand in hand, and there'd be some sort of an overlap. So I can't imagine that the stress tests would, But anyway, we'll see how this fares out. A House committee has cleared the new North American trade deal late yesterday, and of course, setting up approval in the full chamber later this week. You have the House Ways and Means Committee favorably reported the United States-Mexico-Canada agreement, a replacement for NAFTA that was negotiated by Trump administration. Let's see if there's anything interesting in that.
Well, we talked about it the other day. There's not a whole lot of new information in there that we don't already know. Let's see what else.
But I keep reading that Mexico is not happy with that one section. So either they'll have to belly up to the bar and just sign it and see where it goes, or they won't be signing it.
Yeah, they're complaining to the administration, to the the U.S. trade rep, Bob Lighthizer's office. Unfortunately, in that regard, that provision is one that the House Dems insisted on for their support to get it. Through the House and on to the Senate by the end of this year. So I'm not so sure that it's that piece of it is not a fait accompli. Now, if Canada were to balk, and I don't have any reason to think they would, but if Canada was to balk at that provision, well, then it could be interesting. Look for UMSCA to be approved by the House later this week, then on to the Senate, where Majority Leader McConnell says it'll be taken up after the impeachment trial has been completed.
Well, you know, we're continually told that our inflation is so low that we have no inflation. And, you know, we talk about the tuition. These kids can't pay this tuition. The trillions, you know, the highest, what's the debt? 1.6 for
student loan debt.
And, but the average cost of college tuition has outpaced government's inflation number by 3.87% in the last 5 years, while room and board costs have risen 3% more than their fake inflation numbers. Students in Montana, Alaska, and I hate to say this, Maryland, have seen the sharpest hikes, and you know, it's not going to go away. Costs have increased approximately 6.1% nationwide in the past 5 years due to inflation. And
it begs the question, why are costs increasing? Well, besides the fiat dollar and just the nature of purchasing power in a non-gold standard world, the increases in higher education, the tuition, room and board, generally tied to state budget trends. Mm. Now, what that means is that state governments aren't increasing their contributions to state-owned and state-related colleges in their states. A senior staffer of the American Council on Education said higher ed is usually the one area of a budget that can provide its own additional revenue. It's always a bust in bust years, and a boom in boom years, and that's the trend. Now, state funding for higher education has stabilized since the Great Recession, but is only halfway recovered since then. College costs in Montana, for example, has increased the most among the 50 states, rising just shy of 13% more than inflation over the last 5 years.
Wow, 13% in Montana. Wow. Lower prices for oil and coal due to waning demand hurts the state's overall revenue and consequently its budget for higher education. You know, fiscal support for higher education has dropped a little over 3% in the last 2 years in Montana, according to the Center for the Study of Education Policy at the Illinois State University. So other expensive states, costs in Alaska, which is another state dependent on oil, have increased a little over 9% versus inflation since 2015. The last frontier state experienced the second sharpest decline in state fiscal support for higher education, with funds dropping almost 14% in the last 5 years. You know, we normally report on this because these numbers come out. I don't think we have to go into deep detail, but they are interesting. Total mortgage application volume fell 5% from the previous week. This is according to the Mortgage Bankers Association, yet volume was 65% higher compared with the same week 1 year ago when interest rates were considerably higher. And the average contract interest rate for 30-year fixed-rate mortgages with conforming loan balance remained unchanged at 3.98%. Refinance volume was the weakest, falling 7% for the week. Anything else in that, Dave?
Nope.
All right. Well, here's something a little more near and dear to my heart. Higher gold prices are going to stay as investors embrace gold and silver in this new era of low interest rates and all of this market uncertainty. Although investor optimism has improved as recession fears has abated in the last few months of 2019, as I mentioned in the Fear and Greed Index, how that popped up to 87%, you know, and that was just a week ago or so that it was heading downward. Steve Dunn, head of exchange-traded products at Aberdeen Standard Investment, says there's still strong fundamental support to push gold prices higher. Dunn recently said that gold prices could reach as high as $1,700 an ounce by the end of next year, and there is still enough geopolitical uncertainty for gold to continue the attractive safe haven demand. So with equities at record highs, many investors are starting to question, how long is this bull run going to last? So we're seeing more appetite for gold as the insurance purpose.
Yeah, well, not only do investors face continued financial market uncertainty, particularly in the paper markets, Dunn noted that because interest rates are so low, they don't offer the same level of protection when compared to previous years. He said the fundamentals are in place for higher gold prices in 2020, and all it needs is a spark to ignite the new rally. Now, although trade tensions between the U.S. and China have eased relative to where they were just a couple of days ago, Dunn said that this will still be an ongoing issue in 2020. He added that he believes the Phase 1 agreement recently announced is underwhelming, his word. As for the potential headwinds for gold, Dunn said that the lack of inflation could weigh on the precious metal next year. Melody, if only the CPI and PCE were more accurately reflected, I think we'd see a completely different story and quickly. And that's probably a primary reason why we don't, how it would impact the dollar and precious metals. But
You know, this has been a challenge. I mean, for people who buy gold, and that's why we talk a lot about the fiat dollar, because you really have to understand the fundamentals of money and why gold and why they're so resistant to gold and why basically government hates gold. You know, it exposes their dirty little secrets on how they do manipulate the numbers that are produced that would make gold go up. You cannot have these super high market prices with also high gold prices. It just doesn't work that way. That doesn't mean we're not going to see gold prices rise, but to see gold rise to 5,000 and 6,000, you know, we're going to have to see some, you know, a little bit of a spark. And but gold prices and silver prices, and this Dunn, he also says, don't forget about silver. You know, he talks about how much, you know, he's also bullish on silver. When at valuations in the precious metal space, he thinks even if we don't see a recession in 2020, the prices are going to push much higher on renewed industrial demand. So either way, prices are going higher. And either way, we're heading into a break no matter what. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, 1-800-375-4188. Well, Americans seem to, they just continue to get hit when it comes to taxes, and now they're going to lose a tax strategy. And it's a popular retirement tax strategy, and it's going to be lost next year. And what this tax strategy is, it allows the wealthy to save large inheritance in retirement accounts. Several retirement provisions were tucked into a bipartisan $1.4 trillion spending package that the federal lawmakers are scheduled to pass on Friday. And among the many items in the bill, and we should be talking about a little bit more about these items in the bill, one of them that would eliminate a financial planning tactic called the stretch IRA. The maneuver is used primarily by Americans who have saved a substantial amount of money in their retirement accounts, applies to beneficiaries of IRAs and certain workplace retirement plans like 401ks. Current tax rules state that beneficiaries such as children and grandchildren who inherit retirement accounts when the account owner dies must take distributions from those accounts over a certain period of time.
Yeah, today, under current law, that time frame can be lengthy since it's based on the beneficiary's age and life expectancy. So you could be a female who's 40 years old when you're, say, your parents die, you inherit their IRA or 401k, your life expectancy is 80, so you take that payment over 40 years. One of the spending bills, the Further Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2020, significantly compresses the window of time for beneficiaries to take such distributions. That would have broad implications for many Americans, potentially even those of more modest incomes. The legislation passed the House yesterday afternoon. It's headed to the Senate. It is expected to pass there tomorrow or Friday and be signed into law by the president before midnight. Now, the new rules around the stretch IRA would require beneficiaries of 401k plans and IRAs to withdraw all the money that they inherited from those retirement accounts over just 10 years instead of over their life expectancy.
And I believe this is true for both traditional and pre-tax retirement accounts and tax-free Roth accounts.
Yeah.
And failing to withdraw these funds within the 10-year period would result in a 50% tax penalty on assets remaining in the account. Hmm. And so, I mean, this is a hotly contested eliminating this is hotly contested in D.C., but I guess it'll be signed on Friday. Would you like to add anything else to that, Dave?
No. I mean, the proponents of ending the status quo say retirement accounts were never meant for this type of estate planning. Nevertheless, particularly if you're less well off, elimination or the compression of taking that an inherited IRA, for example, will have an impact on the beneficiaries.
Well, you know, heading into the we're into the last segment of the program today. We have brevity is golden, so I think this is. I'm not quite sure how to view this, Dave. is meant as
we'll call it cultural tongue-in-cheek.
I guess we could call it that, but why don't you go ahead and tell us about your brevity is golden.
Well, a little different topic this time, ladies and gentlemen. Since we're approaching the end of a decade, the 2010s, thought we'd take a quick look at a part of our culture that's kind of come full circle over the last decade. But one warning, this week's Brevity is Golden isn't all that brief. Now, in the last 10 years, we've been sad with Cano, felt sorry for thirsty Marco Rubio, and broke the internet for none other than Kim Kardashian. So as we approach a new decade, the time has come to reflect on the memes that made the last 10 years as horrifically weird as they were. Now, in 2010, many of us were naive as to what social media and the internet would become, has become. First iPad was released in January that year, and the iPhone, which had been released only 3 years prior, wasn't quite yet in everyone's pockets. Facebook, Tumblr, Twitter, they're still relatively new. Vine was a few years away, and TikTok wasn't even a twinkle in our eye. I'm not sure I could tell you what the latter two are or were. While many millennials were still adjusting to life after dial-up, Gen Xers and baby boomers were clacking away on their AOL.com pages and moving on from calling the internet the World Wide Web. Note that when we type in addresses anymore, you really don't have to start it, the address with www. Well, since 2010, arguably the world's largest cultural shift came in the form of the internet. It's drastically shifted how we exist on this planet. Everything from how we talk and eat, how we travel and shop has been impacted, for better or for worse, and frankly, I'm afraid far too much of it has been for worse. In fact, 10 years ago, this following sentence would have been nonsense. In fact, for most of us, it still is. Can you Venmo me for the Uber and Seamless last night? I DM'd you about it, but you left me on read. Huh?
Yeah, really.
You can tell who's a baby boomer and who's not a millennial. Well, this is where memes come into play, ladies and gentlemen. As our collective lingo and methods of communication have shifted, so have our ways of relating to one another, especially if you're younger than 35 or 40. Memes have punctuated daily life with their, frankly, absurdity. Like an inside joke shared with a million other people, memes have made us belly laugh at our desks, scream at our phones in public places, and yes, connect with one another. So whether you related more to the Dogs of 2013 or the distracted boyfriend of 2017, let's real quickly take a look at a few of the best memes of the decade, how they came to be, and you know, where are they now. First up, the Grumpy Cat from 2012. remember Grumpy? Tartar Sauce was its name? The Snowshoe Cat. And her resting mean face. There's another word for mean, but we'll just stick with cleanliness on the program. Now, because of her uniquely irritated face, users edited the cat, who was renamed from Tartar Sauce to Grumpy Cat, in all sorts of situations. By this year, Grumpy Cat's following was up to 1.6 million on Twitter, more than 8 million on Facebook. Well, sadly, in May of this year, the cat died at the age of 7 after complications from a recent urinary tract infection. I guess Grumpy Cat Melody is now Happy Cat. Finally, there are a whole bunch of other Harlem Shake, that's my favorite. We won't go into that, but fast forward to this year, where there's darling little baby Yoda. In a world where franchises are sawiche abundant, the Star Wars adjacent Disney Plus series, The Mandalorian, seemed at first to be something that only the fans of the series would be into. However, embedded in the show is a character not seen before, known as the Child. The Child is apparently a member of the same species as Jedi Master Yoda, who we met in The Empire Strikes Back. But it's not Yoda. It's not a younger form of Yoda, and even though it's baby-looking like, it's apparently a toddler around age 50. Now, none of this actually matters, because the Child is literally the cutest thing to have ever been created. It doesn't even matter what Baby Yoda's doing. We just want to see it happen. Have you seen how cute it is? Have you ever wanted to hold something so much and never let it go? Are you crying right now? No? No, me neither. But anyway, Melody, strange as it is, that's this week.
You just made me feel very old. And I'm only 39.
Falling out as I spoke.
Wow. You know, it's what a world. You know, I saw, you know, and with all of this and the lack of communication face to face anymore, I just saw an article, I think it was from UK, where, you know, more people just communicate digitally. They have digital conversations than speaking face to face. And there's report after report stating that it isn't healthy. It hurts relationships and everything else. And yet, look at the amount of money that these companies have made.
Yeah, hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars.
Yeah.
Just say, I mean, it's a wonder. I mean, no wonder millennials aren't getting married nearly as soon as older generations. They don't go out of the house. They haven't met each other. Their relationships are keystrokes.
It's how do you, you know, but yeah, I mean, it is a whole different world. And
Well, we reap what we sow,
I guess. Well, I read this article earlier this week. It was CVS Health Corps and Omnicare units were sued yesterday by the U.S. government, which accused them of fraudulently billing Medicare and other programs for drugs for older and disabled people without valid prescriptions. The Department of Justice joined whistleblower litigation accusing Omnicare of violating the Federal False Claims Act for illegally dispensing drugs to tens of thousands of patients in assisted living facilities, group homes for people with special needs, and other long-term care facilities. Mm-hmm. According to a civil complaint filed in the Manhattan federal court, Omnicare would often assign new numbers to prescriptions after the original prescriptions expired or ran out of refills.
Wow.
The government said this enabled Omnicare to bill Medicare, Medicaid, and TRICARE. What's TRICARE, which serves military personnel for hundreds of thousands of drugs under what the company internally called rollover prescriptions from 2010 to 2018.
Many of those drugs were anticonvulsants, antidepressants, antipsychotics, treated conditions like dementia, depression, heart disease. Many of them had dangerous side effects requiring supervision by doctors. That's according to the government. A pharmacy's fundamental obligation is to ensure that drugs are dispensed only under the supervision of treating doctors who monitor patients' drug therapies. That's according to a U.S. attorney, Jeffrey Berman. He continued, Omnicare put at risk the health of tens of thousands of elderly and disabled individuals living in assisted living and other residential long-term care facilities. Not surprisingly, the lawsuit seek civil penalties and other damages. Of course, CVS is intending to defend itself rigorously in court.
Well, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court accused the FBI yesterday of misleading in its applications of the surveillance of former Trump campaign advisor Carter Page and ordered the Bureau to explain by January 10th what it plans to do to ensure such abuses do not take place again. You know, but my problem is here they come out and they all say, they did fudge on that and the other. But who's going to be held accountable for it? So now January 10th, they have to explain, but who's going to be held accountable for it? Are these people who misled and gave false information? Or did they lose their jobs? They're lying to the court. To me, that used to be a crime. I don't know, Dave.
There could be some some significant penalties here. I don't know if this is going to be a situation looking for a scapegoat, or if it's just going to somehow be try to be rolled up in some kind of reform package. I think to a large extent it's going to depend on the federal judge or judges. If I don't know if it would be the FISA court judges, or if it would be, which I suspect is probably the case, because as the details of certain cases, Carter Page and others, unfold, I doubt that anyone's going to want to have that aired in a public court where there are court reporters and newspapers and televisions and all that stuff. So because in the context of Russian collusion, the beginnings of the Russia investigation, and all of the airtime and dinner table fodder, water cooler fodder that's provided over the last couple of years, I gotta believe that there's going to be some pressure brought to bear on the White House and Congress to hold someone accountable for this.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're out of time. I want to thank you for joining us, and we'll be back tomorrow. So until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.
There never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.